I'm Ben Kiefer. A judge in Texas has temporarily blocked President Obama's orders to shield millions of people who are in the U.S. illegally. The White House says it will appeal the decision. Tomorrow on this program, Politics Day, we'll discuss this, the latest chapter in the battle over immigration in this country, with our analysts Stefan Schmidt of Iowa State University and Tim Hagel of the University of Iowa. Also on tomorrow's program, an update on how big money is changing our politics. That from the Center for Public Integrity. We hope you'll join us tomorrow for Politics Wednesday here on River to River. This half hour, we want to learn about silt. No, it doesn't have to do with riverbeds. It's an acronym for the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust. And this unique land trust made its debut in front of hundreds of farmers and landowners last month at the Practical Farmers of Iowa annual conference. Joining us to talk about it, Susan Arum is the SILT Board President. Hello, Suzanne.
Good afternoon. It's Susan.
Is it Susan or Suzanne?
Yeah.
Susan. Beg your pardon. Susan Arum is with us in our Des Moines studio. Also in our Des Moines studio, Mary Ellen Miller is SILT's first farm donor. Mary Ellen, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here, Ben.
Susan, start us off by telling us a little bit more about what SILT is. How is it different than the other land trusts that exist in our state?
Well, SILT's mission is to protect land to grow healthy food. A few years ago, we looked around the landscape. We saw a big land transition happening with older farmers who wanted to keep their farmland in food production. We saw a lot of young people coming back to Iowa wanting to grow healthy food for their communities. And then we saw land prices out of reach for them. So we thought that's a niche that needs to be covered, and it hasn't been. So The other land trusts really focus on natural beauty. We're focusing on working lands.
Okay, so tell us what happens generally when a farm is not being taken over by the next generation. It needs to be sold. Where is it going to without this land trust, for instance?
Well, we see two pressure points. Folks are either selling to the developers if their land is in the right place for development, or they're selling to the next larger farm. Either way, those two competing forces, development and larger farmers, are driving up the price of land out of reach of young farmers who want to just do small farming.
Mm-hmm. So I understand a story personally with you. You and your husband bought a farm for a young farmer?
We did. It's a great experiment. He's doing very well. 145 acres north of Iowa City. It's called VersaLand. Very hardworking fella. But we, and later in our lives, were able to put up the credit and the down payment that he needed to get started. And we were looking forward to when he can refinance and buy it from us for the same price we paid for it. That's our deal. We don't want to make money, but we can't afford to lose money. But we also realized that, you know, doing this one farmer at a time with our kind of resources it'd be a long time before we had any major impact. And that we talked to enough other people who said they wish that they could do that sort of thing, that we thought, okay, maybe we need to go statewide with this effort.
Mm-hmm. Give us the financials. How does a trust work in this case?
Well, it's not like a family trust. A nonprofit land trust is a different entity. Just think of it as a nonprofit organization that has special requirements and responsibilities related to land. So in our case, we protect the land forever, the foreseeable forever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in our case, instead of just protecting it from development, which is what most of our natural heritage groups do, we would also require that it be used for food production.
Okay. So you're protecting it from being paved over or turned into a housing development or paved over into a big parking lot, for instance.
Right. Or even the next larger farm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mary Ellen Miller, you are SILT's, and remind our listeners, the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust is what that acronym stands for, first farm donor. How did you learn about this?
Well, Ben, I've been advocating for something like this for over 25 years when I started to see the impacts of urban sprawl on our premium ag land in Iowa. I formed a coalition of people in north central Iowa to try and promote what I call mindful land use planning. At the same time, over the years, we've seen this absolute growing interest in local food. People want to know that their food is healthy. They want to know where it's grown. They want to know where it comes from. They often want to know the farmer itself. And then the third thing that layered on, and I, as I said, I've been advocating for 25 years, so I would think I was just waiting for Susan to walk in the door. But the third thing that's happened more recently is the concern about long-range food security, not just in third-world countries, but that that can actually impact people in our country. Mm-hmm. We know today that we're importing. We used to be the breadbasket of the world. We're now importing 85 to 90% of our edible food. That makes no sense when we're sitting on this rich farmland.
Mm-hmm. So what would you think would be a better balance in terms of food to get more food security so that more of the food that we're eating is actually coming out of our own soil?
Well, I think the thing I like about the way this land trust is set up and what it's geared at in terms of local food production is it doesn't require thousands of acres. 40 acres, 100 acres can feed a lot of families. A lot of the way we grow food today has been advanced by technology. I had a greenhouse nursery business that I started back in the 70s. That technology is leaps and bounds above what we had in those days. So there are many tools that food growers have today at their ready that would make it possible to not use giant-sized farms to grow plenty of food.
So talk about your donation to the trust. How many acres?
40 acres is what I'm donating. Susan and I had several conversations as she was putting this together, and initially she had what she thought was a first donor. And it actually turned out to be a woman landowner that I knew. And so we were quite excited because we wanted to have things in place before the launch. And then one day Susan called me, and I could just hear the disappointment in her voice when she said, "We lost the donor. She didn't want to be first." And I didn't give it a thought. Words just came out of my mouth. I said, "I'll give you my farm." And it didn't take a first thought or a second thought, because it is critical that we show people that this can happen.
Mm-hmm. So what does that mean, a donation? Do you get anything in return?
Well, I get the land preserved in perpetuity and guarantee that it won't be plowed under for a monoculture row crop. It won't be plowed or paved over for a development. And it won't have, I can put all kinds of things in my easement, and it won't have large animal confinements. It will be dedicated solely for the use of real healthy food.
So, Susan, is this so each individual donor can stipulate what type of farm food production is there? So the big umbrella limitation there is it has to be in food production, and can you individually say what you'd like done with your donation?
Well, that's the creative part of this. Every farmland donor has their own image of what they want to see into the future. And so we'll have some broad parameters that we bring to each owner, and then we'll negotiate some of the smaller things. But you're right, there's a baseline of food production and sustainable food production that all those easements will have to meet. Most of our donors understand that the more restrictions you put on an easement, the more difficult it is to enforce it. Mm-hmm. And that means it costs more money. It takes more time. And that requires, you know, generally a larger cash donation that comes with the land or easement donation, just so that we can put that in our monitoring fund. So there is a certain limit. There's a certain time when we'll have to say, you know, this much we can't do. But Mary Ellen and I have had this conversation, and she's well within any parameters.
Mary Ellen, what's happening on that 40 acres now, or will be soon happening there?
Well, I'm preparing for the next generation of farmer by planting nut trees, something that takes a long time to maturity. But whoever comes onto this farm and grows food needs a pretty diverse crop. And so the land that I have is very amenable to nut trees. The walnut grove is already there. I've started the pecan grove, and now I'm working on the chestnuts and the hazelnuts.
Right. Lovely to have nut trees in our state. Why haven't there been nut trees?
Used to be a lot. Used to be many, many, just like we used to have apple orchards everywhere, too. And that's another piece of my plan, is to put those things that take a while to mature in the ground now so that they're ready to go when we find a farmer.
Okay. We're talking about the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust with Susan Arum and Mary Ellen Miller. And we'd like to have you join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Perhaps you're a farmer, a young farmer who's trying to find some land, and this idea interests you. Also joining us, John Baker is with us, a farm transition specialist for Iowa State University Extension. John Baker of ISU, welcome to our program.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
You've been listening to the conversation now. This idea of transition is something that ISU Extension has been involved in. What do you think of this first land trust specifically for this type of food production?
Well, I think thing that makes this effort somewhat unique from other land trusts that was mentioned earlier, and that is that its focus is not simply on preserving land, but preserving farmland that can be farmed profitably. And that's one of the real issues involved. There are some land trusts that are preserving open space, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that. Land is not farmland unless it's farmed, and it has to be farmed profitably. And the history of the English common law, which were all of our laws based on, is if you have an easement that creates an economic waste, it can be voided. So I think the focus of SILT on protecting a land and having it be able to be farmed profitably is right where it needs to be.
Do you see any drawbacks for this approach?
Well, in some parts of the country, when the development rights are purchased off the land, which is what an easement basically does, it may, rather than reduce the price of the land and make it accessible, it may actually increase it. Because if you have someone that wants to have a home in a pristine area with no agriculture, with no development around them, and the land can't be developed, they may pay a premium for that piece of land. And so I think there's always that economic forces and balances that have to be there. I don't know that we see that so much in Iowa, but certainly on the East Coast and the West Coast, you see that problem.
John Baker, tell us about some of the other programs that are through ISU Extension, perhaps, that look at this transition when we have a lot of farmers, older farmers, who are wanting to pass on their farms, make this transition. We do want young farmers out there.
Oh, definitely. And Iowa State University has been involved in this since back in 1990, when we began a program that is now called AgLink. Back then it was called Farm On, and it's designed to find opportunities for young people to get into agriculture of any kind. We try to help them, whatever the kind of agriculture is that they want to, by finding an existing farmer that has no heirs or no heirs that want to take over the farm business, and finding them a young person who is interested in taking over the farm business. And then we will offer them a variety of services, consultations, and developing a farm business succession plan.
Okay, so you have a young person with a desire, so there's some mentorship that you provide that often needs to be provided, because if it's a first-generation farmer, there's just not that institutional or that knowledge going back.
Yes, that may well be true, and hopefully we can get them working with that existing farmer prior to retirement, prior to when they're exiting the farm business, and they can get that mentorship. We also offer seminars on farm business succession planning. We just last weekend finished up with our 4-day Returning to the Farm seminar that's held at Ames. It was attended by 10 farm families from Iowa, Illinois, and North Carolina. So people are coming from other states to our educational programs. And then we have a Beginning Farmer Center at Iowa State University. I was fortunate enough to work with the legislature to create that in 1994. And we do research into farm transitions and looking at succession planning.
Okay, John Baker is with ISU University Extension, a farm transition specialist. I've got a couple callers who want to join our conversation. Let's go to Kate. Kate calling, I see, from the Okoboji area. Hi, Kate. What's your angle on this issue?
Hi. Yeah, thank you for letting me join the conversation. I'm a beginning farmer in northwest Iowa, located in the Iowa Great Lakes region, and I am currently looking for land this area, but because of the tourism industry, there is quite a bit of development pressure here. And working with an organization like SILT would be really great for me as a beginning farmer, but I'm sure that many beginning farmers across the state would really appreciate having this option.
Mm. So you're looking for land. You're a farmer, you're in need of land, and this sounds like something that you could do. You want a sustainably farm food in Iowa on a smaller farm. Susan, beginning to get a lot of people like Kate coming to you?
Yes.
Have you? What's been the response like?
In the first few weeks, it was amazing the number of beginning farmers who came out of the woodwork. We have a story of a man who was born and raised in Iowa, but is farming in Wisconsin right now, and he wrote to us and said, I had practically given up on Iowa with all of its industrial agriculture, but then I heard about you guys. Do you have anything available? I heard from a young fellow the other day who's just graduating from Iowa State saying, I've just learned about all of this and I want to put it to work. We have families from all over the place, young families and young men and women who want to get their hands dirty. They want the land. We've also gotten some calls from potential donors as well. I think people were skeptical that people would actually hand over an entire farm or a piece of farm. But we're getting those calls, people who want to leave a legacy, who can work the tax benefits into their estate planning well, who want to remove the farm as a point of contention among their children. There's all kinds of ways to incorporate donating to a land trust into those bigger issues.
Yeah, Kate is looking for land. How do you evaluate any people in search of farmers in search of land? How do you?
Well, our board is constituted to guarantee that it always has one third of it as farmers. We also have a fair number of farmers on our advisory council. And those farmers, we expect, will be leading the vetting process for all farmer applicants to see if they have enough understanding of what they're getting into, either from real life experience or from school, to be able to take on a project. And then we will match those up with the farms that are available when they become available. But we're leaning on a lot of other folks who have done all of this hard work, like John Baker's outfit and the folks at Iowa State, Practical Farmers of Iowa, Land Stewardship Project up in Minnesota. There's all kinds of organizations and resources out there and older land trusts, especially farmland trusts from the coast, that can warn us about the problems they've gotten into, like the one John mentioned about estates. We've already developed language to keep that from happening, for example, on our farms. So with all of these networks that we've developed over the last 2 years before we even launched, we're pretty confident that the challenges ahead of us are ones that we can meet because we have quite a high level of expertise in our inner circle here.
Kate, if you're still with us calling in from the Okoboji area, what have been the problems in locating land? What have you encountered? Because you've been looking for land how long?
Well, I moved back to Iowa in April because I wanted to, it's always been a lifelong dream to start a small farm. And I grew up in Iowa and I want to do that here close to family where my roots are. So I did an apprenticeship on a farm last season and I started to look for land in early fall. So I'm just starting my search. It's been about 6 months. But land is expensive in Iowa. It's some of the most expensive farmland in the country. The soil is great, so it's a great place to want to come back and farm and grow food for my community, but the land prices are really high. And there's a lot of competition for open land, both by development where I am and also other farmers who want to expand mostly their commodity crop operations.
Okay, Kate, thanks for dialing our number and sharing your experience, and good luck finding that farm to produce food sustainably.
Thank you.
Coming to the end of our hour, let's talk with Jan. Jan calling from Iowa City. Hi, Jan.
Hi, yes. The land is a profoundly spiritual connection for me. And my question kind of comes from the opposite direction of Kate's. When people give their farms, are they putting them into trust with easements, or are they transferring ownership to Silt? And if they're transferring ownership, is there a means where they can be recompensed for the land at a below market price, and the land can continue to transfer to farmers on a limited equity basis? Or so basically, can people put their land into this program without simply donating the land?
Okay, Susan, can you tackle that?
We're looking at actually all of those options for silt. Right now, we're not in the position to be able to buy any land, of course, because we're just getting started. But we are taking on easements, and that means permanently taking on the permanent responsibility to enforce the restriction on the land to grow healthy food, but you maintain ownership of the land. We're taking on land donations where silt would be the sole owner of the property, and we would provide long-term affordable leases to farmers, and they would own the house, the barn, and the business and earn equity in that. And this idea of transitioning land to ownership to the next generation is something that we are tapping the expertise actually from both coasts. We've had a lot of interest from the West Coast and the East Coast, more experienced groups helping us figure out a way that a C3, a nonprofit, can legally engage that kind of transition. But I'm confident that we're going to be able to do it.
So that was the question I wanted to end with. So you are learning from other states and other entities that are similar to SILT.
Oh, absolutely. That's the benefit of us being new and them having done it for 40 years. They've learned all kinds of lessons in the many transitions they've had, and we can just tap that.
Okay. Well, the bud is opening. We have just a few seconds left, Susan. The bud is opening on SILT. What do you expect it will be in 5 or 10 years? What do you hope?
We're going to be the place for young farmers to come to and look for affordable ways to get into healthy food farming. And we're going to have access to food for our cities and towns.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Susan Arum is the SILT board president. SILT stands for the Sustainable Iowa Land Trust. And Susan, tell us how people can find out more before we go.
Go to silt.org to volunteer or donate. Thank you.
Okay, that's very easy. SILT.org. Susan Arum is the board president at SILT. Mary Ellen Miller has the honor of being the first farm donor. Mary Ellen, thanks for coming into our studio.
Glad to be here, Ben.
And John Baker, thank you for coming from ISU Extension Service.
Glad to participate.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Politics Day is tomorrow. We'll hope you join us again then. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.